This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
The flesh is weak, honey, and you can fall in love with the wrong parts of people sometimes.
You don't normalize abuse of power, but we did. I just worked with Leo DiCaprio, and I got a call from my London agent saying, hey, you have to come and read for Cleopatra. And I was like, I'll be there tomorrow.
Hey, what up, y'all? It's your girl, Vivica Fox, and welcome to an all-new Hustling with Vivica A. Fox. We are going bigger and bolder. Your hustle's going to get an upgrade with the most surprising, exciting, and fabulous guests from all walks of life. You're in good hands, darlings. All right, now, come on in here. We're going to get our acting thing on today. I'm so happy to talk to this lovely lady. My guest today is a glamorous international television and movie star, fluent in not one, not two, not three, but four languages, y'all, okay? Four languages. My guest, Leonor Varela, has worked with the likes of Leonardo DiCaprio, Ashton Kutcher, Wesley Snipes, and my boy, QT, Quentin Tarantino, just to name a few. She was born in Chile. She found a home as an actress and a model, which led to a huge career, which has spanned decades. She also has kept it real when it comes to life. This award-winning actress just wrapped the lead in the film La Vaca. Next up, she will shoot the lead in the Amazon film Lie to Me. And she's also developing This Is Not a Love Song. She's here to share her secrets to a long, successful career and deep and lasting relationships with our loved ones. Please welcome to Hustling with Vivica A. Fox, Leonor. Hey, girl.
Hey, love. Thank you for such a beautiful intro and for providing this space for us to chat and share with the world. Thank you so much. I love being here. I know you're all about celebrating women, and I love that.
Yeah, you're welcome, darling. Let me tell you, I already love you because your first name is my zodiac sign, Leonor.
How am I not surprised that you're in love?
Now tell me, why do you say that?
I don't know.
She's like, that's why, Miss Leo lady. So let's take people back, because like I told you in our pre-interview that, you know, this is all about celebrating your journey and your career. So tell us where you're from.
I was born in Chile just before there was a political unrest and a coup d'etat. So my family was exiled from the political difficulties and the dictatorship of Pinochet. So I very quickly grew up in exile. When I see all the news about, you know, the things that are happening to immigrants, I feel it very deep in my bones. And I truly understand what it's like to not be able to stay home or die, sort of thing. It was sort of that situation with my family. So we fled to Costa Rica first for a year. And then my father got a position at the University of Denver teaching. And then that led to my first 8 years in Colorado. And then back to Chile, and then we moved to France, and then my dad got different grants, and we would go and live at different places, and then Germany, and then so I kind of grew up traveling a lot, hence the languages.
Yeah,
always being displaced, always being a foreigner, always being an immigrant. So that's truly, I think, my identity. If people are like, "Where are you from?" I'm like, "I'm from Chile," because that feels like my ground, my earth, my ocean, my mountains. Yes. That's the place that just makes me, you know, gives me the tingles inside. But I've been living in LA for, I don't know, I don't even like more than 20 years. So
yes,
it feels like home too. So I feel like a displaced immigrant, really, is what I am.
Well, speaking of immigrants, I want to go back to what you said, that you can so relate that now when you turn on the news and you see, you know, the immigrants having to go through, you know, gosh, living under like horrid conditions. I mean, like, I never thought I would see anything like this in my life, to be very honest with you. And to, you know, see it where for African-Americans, it reminds us like slavery, with them cracking the whips and chasing them down and this. Now you are a child as a refugee. What impact did that have on you as a child?
Truly, as a baby in diapers, I don't fully remember any of it, but I do remember, and I still have that sort of gut and knee jerk reaction when I see uniforms and military. I cross the street. It like intrinsically scares me because my experience from my parents, what I inherited from them, is the fear from the armed forces. Because they were oppressors. My grandfather went missing one day. They picked him up. They tortured him and we never saw him again. He was murdered and went missing. One of the many that went missing. So the impact I feel is not, it's very indirect. It's through my parents. It's how they experienced the loss of their loved ones and the repression. Now, you know, living here and living in the US, I've really come to become more friendly with the police, armed forces, and identifying them hopefully more as allies. But it's not my first reaction. I'm usually very cautious, first of all, around men in general, because society as women, it's just, you know, when do you walk in the dark feeling safe, Ivisha? We just don't.
Okay, we don't.
You know what I mean? Just we absolutely. We do not have that privilege. So
my head is always on a swivel. And I always tell young ladies that when you're out at night, your head, if you're alone, your head needs to be on a swivel. You need to be on your phone. You need to always be cautious. And it's unfortunate for women that it is like that.
But it hopefully will no longer be like that. And I like the conversations that are taking place today. And I don't mean to hijack this conversation into feminism, but I truly believe that it's a privilege that we also should have. That it's not meant to be this way always. Like, we have learned fear of men. We have learned fear for our security, for our bodies, because we're so easily the target of aggression. And it's just something that I don't know. I have a sense of injustice and a sense of like feminism. Maybe it's inherited from this trials that my family went through, but I just think it's something that needs to be talked about and not normalized. It is not normal that we need to be afraid as a woman. It is not normal that a man can go out at night and not think about it twice. And we're like on the phone, head on the swivel, like always aware with our dog, with the pepper spray, with the keys in the hand. Like,
you talk to them keys like, and they roll up on you, you know? Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I love that.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
So now I want to go back to, you said about your grandfather, that your grandfather was picked up and tortured and killed. Did you all find out what happened to him, or he just went missing and you assumed that when you never saw him again, that he was killed?
The latter. Yes. Mm. The latter. He's one of the many that went missing. And my grandmother carried this burden for, you know, the last 50 years of her life. It's like, where is my husband? And that feeling of not knowing what happened to your loved one is I don't even know. There's no words. It's inhumane.
Yeah. Yes.
So we later found out through a testimony from somebody that had been a cleaner in the facility that they were tortured, that he had been there, that what they had done for him and where they had supposedly dumped him. Mm. Many were dumped from helicopters into the ocean.
Oh, Lord.
Oh, yeah. Us humans, we do some weird things to one another.
It's sad. We do. In the way of thinking that it's okay to do it, that you rip loved ones from their families, that you destroy families, that women don't get to see their husbands again, that children don't get to see their father again, all in just the thing of like, oh, okay, I can do it. I always find that to be so cruel and sad.
And I just would hope that we never get comfortable with dehumanization. I hope we never get comfortable with the idea that one human being or one race or one political party would have this right to inflict upon others that sort of torture or pain. I hope we never get comfortable with the kids being torn apart from their families at the borders. I hope that we never get comfortable with, you know, the immigrants not having asylum when they really look for it.
Can I tell you the beauty of everything now is that that camera don't lie.
Oh man. Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Those Haitians, man, on horseback riders, yeah. Those webs. We were all like very quick to find out about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's the beauty for our children now, that things are being exposed a lot quicker than what they were. They could all lie and make up a story and say this happened or just not care and not say anything, you know? Exactly. So but that camera don't lie. True. Yeah. But I want to talk a little bit more about your family because you said you guys' family were globetrotters. Going all over the place. Yeah. But you ended up in all places, Colorado.
Yeah, as a child. Yes.
Yes. How did that happen?
My dad was a scientist, and I think it was just a matter of like
with all of that going on, a scientist?
It's one of the reasons why he was persecuted, because he was, you know, an intellectual. So anybody who thought was a risk or threat, you know what I mean? Beyond their political belief.
Wow.
So he was a brilliant mind. He had all of his books here with the Dalai Lama and science. And he was incredibly interesting and interested. And he just got a tenure at the university to teach. And he's like, I'll take it. Like, let's just like move forward with life. And so, yeah, that led to a beautiful childhood in Boulder. I got to say, growing up as a kid in the 70s in Boulder was A-okay. It was pretty fun.
I loved it.
It was so safe and like just
how did he get so educated if you guys were, you know, like immigrants? Where did he pick? Was he just a genius? Where did he pick up that intelligence?
You know, my grandfather would always wonder. But my dad got a grant to go to Harvard and graduated at 23 years old from Harvard. Just very, very, very brilliant. Brilliant mind. So, just a grant, just merit.
I love it. Good to hear that. Now you were saying something about the books there that are with you. Do you mind picking up a couple of them and share them? The Dalai Lama. I mean, you know, that connection with your father is just out of sight.
I have some of them in French. Passerelle. This is a good one too. It's called Destructive Emotions. It's it's also with Dan Goleman. It's from the Mind and Life Foundation. They created. And this is one of my personal favorites. It's called Sleeping, Dreaming, and Dying.
Wow. Now tell me the connection with your father and the Dalai Lama. I mean, who is just like, come on, it don't get no bigger than that, girlfriend.
Well, my dad was a scientist who was also a Buddhist, and he bridged these two worlds in the early 80s. And all of a sudden they created this place of conversation, this place of a think tank, if you will, of how, because the Dalai Lama is very educated and curious also in science. So they would go like, well, let's talk science, let's talk Buddhism, and sort of finding the overlap between, understanding how the brain works under meditation and the concepts of quantum physics and the concepts of Buddhism, philosophy wise, and the intercross of these two disciplines. And that kind of bled into all disciplines, whether it be psychology, linguistics, and sort of because it touched on the brain, on learning. I don't want to get too technical about it, but it's truly, truly fascinating. Because he was also very much ahead of his time. We're talking in the 80s here.
Yes, totally ahead of his time. Like now you're like, oh, here, have a TED Talk so we can hear all about it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But now, is this true that the Dalai Lama has a picture of your father in his bedroom?
20 years after he passed away, he calls him his spiritual brother. And it just warms my heart. It's special. Yeah.
That makes me, that just fills my heart because I hear, like myself, you're a daddy's girl.
Yeah.
Yeah. My dad, let me tell
you.
Can you
relate to that?
Yeah, of course. My dad was my hero. My dad was the first man I loved with most girls, but me and my dad had a really amazing
relationship. Mm. He passed away about 5 years ago, but okay. I miss, it's okay because no more suffering. And he loved us and we loved him. And before he passed away, he always like, I know my children love me and I love you guys. So there was peace.
That's wonderful.
You know, so that I have that peace with him passing away, no more suffering, and that he's looking down and he's proud of his baby girl. Like, I'm sure your daddy is very proud of you. And, you know, like I have this girl that runs my fan page and she gifted me, a hand painted picture of my father and I. Girl, wow. It took everything for me just not to break down and ugly cry, like, because you know, that's just how much it is. That's just how much.
To you.
Yeah, I love my daddy. So we've got that in common, besides some other things, that you're daddy's girl and you've worked with Quentin Tarantino. We both have worked with them. So we're going to share things we have in common. That's why I said, I'm here to celebrate you, because it's good, wonderful to meet another powerful, centered, talented woman who we can enlighten other brown girls. And like you said, and other immigrants, to let them know that, look, you know, you moved all around and now here decades later, you've worked with the best of the best in Hollywood. I mean, that's just a dream come true. So we're here to inspire and enlighten others, you know?
That is so important. I think as humans, that's what are sort of what we really strive for. It's like, give meaning to our life by sharing, by connecting in a meaningful way.
Yes.
It's a word that I really use as sort of my North Star, like that connection, like, in your vulnerability, can you find the courage to connect, to share? Because you never know who's listening and you never know who can truly be touched and inspired by it. Maybe if you share honestly without fear of sounding stupid or being vulnerable, because we can all present our perfect selves on Instagram, but truly those are not, and it's great. And that's great.
But it's so fake sometimes.
But the places where we are actually touched by one another are when we're vulnerable, when we're raw, when we're honest. So I love that. I love that you have this space. I think it's so important.
Yeah. So another thing we have in common is Paris.
Oh,
I love Paris. You you were in Paris at 13 years old, and that's where you found your artistic voice. Do you care to share that story with us?
So we got to Paris when I was 13. I just turned 13. And mind you, you know, they changed schools. They changed me school like 6 or 7 times, 4 languages. And I was like, you guys do whatever you want. This is home for me. Paris is my city. Because I walked out of the subway and I was like, wowed by the beauty of the architecture. Proportions are so human. When you're walking the street, you feel like you're part of it. You're not crushed by it, but you're just lifted. All these boobies on the free and the just mind. Everybody was so free in there. I felt so liberated and so easy and cool. And, I don't know. I just started playing guitar and started taking dance lessons and, you know, went to a French public school that was so, they would teach philosophy. It just really fed my soul and my mind in a way that inspired me to find the arts as a way to express them to be and to make a living. I was scouted in the street to model and I could make a living modeling and doing
weird jobs. Did that surprise you?
Kind of. Kate Moss had just become sort of a superstar. And so I was like, oh, I guess you can be a model if you're not like 7 feet tall and like I'm 5'6", you know? Mm-hmm. So I'm proportionate, but I'm a petite girl. And so I was like, oh, I guess this is okay. But it was truly through acting that I found myself to be more happy than just the modeling in. And I do still love modeling and I'm super grateful to it because it's brought so much abundance into my life and I'm very grateful for it. But it's through acting that I found the joy of self-expression and art and creativity and connection and discovery with someone else. And that's there was great theater and opera and I was exposed to all of that. And I still love it and miss it dearly as much as I miss the croissants. I just really do.
Oh my God. Man, you have so many things in favor. First of all, I was discovered modeling, which then now I'm so glad that I can act because at least I can have a croissant.
Who cares, right?
Put some butter on it, as a matter of fact. But that's one of my favorite type of breads. Yes, it's one of my favorites. But I was discovered kind of like you were as well, too.
In the street.
On the street in Los Angeles, Sunset Boulevard, discovered by a producer by the name of Trevor Walton. Who then got me my agent and da-da-da-da-da. So modeling then led to acting for you?
Not really. I went to theater school. I went to the Conservatoire de Paris, the French conservatory. So I studied acting while I was modeling and sort of I was independent at a very young age because of I was able to support myself. Mm. And then modeling sort of got in the way of me being able to dedicate myself a little bit more seriously to studying acting. Mm-hmm. So I would because I spoke multiple languages, I could bartend on a fancy boat and make a lot of money on an evening. And I, presented myself well, and then you'd get good tips. So I would just pay for whatever I need to pay, like working 2-3 days. And so that allowed me to be a little bit more focused on the acting. And then I just started booking jobs. I don't know. I got my first job was a video for Sting. And it was called Let Your Soul Be Your Guide. That was my very first in front of a camera.
What
job.
Was
I
that
wanted to
like?
Shit myself.
Okay, oh my God. Girl, let me tell you something. Sting.
Sting 1980, mind you. Like
yes!
Sting at his Sting. Finest, at his most. Yes.
Yes.
And he was, I just remember a human being that was so gracious. So sweet, so kind. I was wiping the drool off my face.
You get it why he's a rock star, huh? Mm-hmm. Yes. You know, like some rock stars, they just have that thing. It's magnetic and undeniable. You know, once again, that camera don't lie. You either
that
got
camera
it or you
don't lie. Yeah.
So now I hear that theater got you a lot of great roles.
Well, the thing is, my dad would take me to the opera at an early age and would take me to theater. And in Paris, there was this one particular theater that was, if you guys don't know this, please check it out. It's called the Empty Space by Peter Brook. And he created this theater that was an old theater, but empty, huge, old, dilapidated, beautiful. And you would sit in the audience and you had the most eclectic group of racial actors. Japanese, Black, from the Netherlands, South American, from everywhere, from around the world. And that was his troupe of actors that would perform classic pieces like The Tempest of Shakespeare, which is one that really like struck me. And I was so transported by the beauty of imagery that was created with all these different faces. And I was like, I can relate to that. It's so important representation in that sense. Because I could see all these different cultural, not just the blonde French, you know what I mean? I could see all these races acting out all these different parts.
Wow.
And I was transported to a place where I was like, I want to make people feel what I'm feeling right now. Because this is magical. This is magical.
Is it still there?
I started. Well, Peter Brook has passed away. He has multiple books. I think Empty Space would be the one that I recommend anybody in acting have a look at because it's truly inspiring and so current still to this date. But I think it's still there. I'm not sure. I'd have to go back and tell you.
Yeah.
Let's rendezvous in Paris.
I love it. I'm hoping to go there soon.
I miss it.
Yeah, I have a friend now that's French, and he speaks sometimes, and I just am like, you
a
know,
friend,
just,
friend, what friend, what kind of friend, friend?
It's
what,
a friend.
Okay,
that's another reason why I love Paris. Yes, it's a city of love, and it's just like I don't know the language. To me, just always kind of makes me just.
Mais mon ami, moi je veux parler français quand tu veux.
See, oui. I'm about to melt right in this chair, y'all. Yes.
Yes.
Oh, about to make me melt. Yes, you already know, girl. So listen, I want to get to acting, some more acting roles, because you had a breakout role, Cleopatra. What? Cleopatra? I can see
it. You
be a beautiful Cleopatra. Look at that bone structure.
Thank you.
Yes, tell me about that.
I don't know, man. It was kind of a crazy, I don't, you know, these castings, you, it's so weird. Like you have to be in the right place, the right time, and mm-hmm. sort of your soul calls in this part and it's yours. And that's sort of what happened. I had started acting in, you know, as we discussed in Paris, and I traveled a little bit to Chile to shoot. And then I was back in Paris. I just worked with Leo DiCaprio, and I got a call from my London agent saying, "Hey, you have to come and read for Cleopatra." And I was like, "I'll be there tomorrow." Are you kidding me?
On my way.
I read the script in the Eurostar because you take the train underwater and it's brand new. So I was like in the train reading the script, and I got to the audition. There was another girl, beautiful girl. And I don't know, I think Cleopatra took possession of me because I did something that I would never do.
What was it?
Oh, he's like, "Well, you guys can go prepare in these two rooms and then you'll read the sister," because Cleopatra had a sister called Arsinoe. And Arsinoe and two wanted to take away the throne. Anyway, so we were both going to exchange roles. We were going to both read Cleopatra and then we were both going to read Arsinoe at different times. So I went and I knocked on her door. I was like, "Knock, knock." And I was like, "Do you want to run lines?" And she's like, "Of course, yeah." So I was like, "Okay, let's run lines." And I ran lines like all like this, like super shy and like reading my lines, like giving her nothing.
The trickery. I love it. Okay.
That is so not me. I'm telling you, I got possessed. And then she started doing Cleopatra, and the moment came around where it turned around and I got to be Cleopatra, and I let the fire rip from my guts. And I was like,
"Oh my gosh," she probably was like, "Who is this?"
And she was like, "Oh my God." I ate her up alive.
Well, happens.
So obviously I got the part, and she got cast as the sister because she was also excellent. So
So it was perfect. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was perfect. But it was one of those things, is like, I just felt like I got possessed by her. And I just wouldn't do that today. I just think it's kind of very ballsy of me.
Yeah. But sometimes when you want a role, it's like by any means necessary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel a little guilty, but at the same time, I don't, you know.
Yeah, I was going to say, don't feel guilty. I'm sure you killed it. Yeah.
I really feel like it was a role for me and it was meant to be. And it, you know, it brought so much to my life. It really helped me expand my career. I had never considered Los Angeles as a goal. It wasn't sort of a thing that I had in mind. And I came to LA to promote this with a suitcase I was going to be here for 2 weeks, and 21 years later, here I am. So,
wow. Now you had billboards on Sunset Boulevard. Another thing we got in common, Times Square. Okay. You know. Yes. And then it just completely brought your life to LA, correct? But at first it was a little lonely for you because you didn't have family around. And so how did you adjust?
It was hard, honestly. It was a difficult and conflicted time in my life because as you mentioned, I didn't have anybody here. I didn't know LA. It was very foreign to me. I came from Paris, like walking the streets. I didn't even drive. I really was like out of my element in LA. And I didn't really understand. It was a lot of fame very quick. And it was difficult for me to process. I moved to New York for a year because it was too much for me. I just.
LA was? I find that so fascinating that you felt LA was harder than New York, because I feel just the opposite. I go to New York now and I'm like, "Ooh, this is a lot." You know, I can't wait to get back to LA, you know?
Yes. But you have to remember, there is a more multicultural friction there's French cafes. You can go have a baguette and a croissant in New York much more easily than you can in LA.
Yeah.
I found some sense of similarity to Paris, which was my groove, in New York. It only lasted for a year when I was like, I was broke. I ran out of all my money and I had to come back crawling to LA to please hire me.
Because let me tell you,
it is expensive to live
as a mug in New York. I know. Yeah. Trust and believe that.
Another day is here and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help.
For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
I heard that one of your billboards was so beautiful that Harvey Weinstein saw you and was like, that girl right there, let's get in touch with her.
Yeah, I got offered a picture deal.
Mm-hmm. And not only that, not only did he want to get in touch with you, he wanted to offer you a 3-picture deal. He was trying to put you on lockdown, girl.
I signed with my agents at the time with Endeavor. I signed a 3-picture deal with Miramax, and they flew me to New York, I was like, great. I mean, I guess I'm staying in LA, in the US. And I shot a Western with them. It's called Texas Rangers. Like a bunch of really fun actors and
gorgeous great guys.
Yes, quite a few gorgeous
guys.
Tell
us a quick thing about the co-stars real quick. Yeah, Usher, Ashton Kutcher.
Ashton Kutcher, James Vanderbeek, Dylan McDermott, Rachel Lee Cook, who's also just adorable, and Patrick, I forget.
Dempsey? Was it Patrick Dempsey?
No, I worked with Patrick Dempsey. I'm something else. Terminator Patrick.
Was it the blonde one? The mean one?
Yeah.
I don't know his last name, but I know what you're talking about.
You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And it was a great experience, but they're like, well, you got to go to dinner with the producers. And I was like, I'm not comfortable. I don't know. I feel weird. I'm not comfortable going. And my agents were like, well, you've got to go to dinner. I was like, no, I don't have to go to dinner. And I'm not going to got to go to dinner. I'm just not.
Wow.
And I didn't go to dinner with the producers, with the Weinsteins. And then goes my contract. And they never hired me again.
The contract left?
They just didn't use me. They just didn't, decide to rehire me, put me in something else, which is their prerogative. Of course, they were not in breach of anything, but it just goes to show you how the system and how they worked. Like if you didn't play by the rules of their game, mm-hmm. which as we know now in hindsight was disgusting, revolting, repelling, and all the words that I can't even put together, but just wrong of abuse of power,
You trusted your gut. What in your gut made you say no?
I didn't feel safe. Simply and plainly as that. It just made me feel uncomfortable. I was like, I don't want to be here. I just don't want to be here. And I've really learned to trust that instinct as a woman, because we have to navigate so much. We've had to, especially our generation. I mean, I look at my friends that are actresses that are in their 20s and 30s, and I'm like, you are so blessed because you don't normalize abuse of power. But we did because that's what we grew up with. And so there was something that I've always had this, and I don't know what I owe it to, but just a sense of being able to step back when necessary for my well-being, for my mental health, and for my well-being and all the hardships of my life. I feel like hustling hard also means self-care. Yes. It also means being able to be true to yourself and authentic. And if you don't feel safe, even if you feel you might risk or lose something, then you gotta go by that. I don't know anything would have happened to me or not, but I know that to be true to myself at that moment, I wasn't comfortable being there.
Good. I'm glad that you had the strength to say no. Because then you went on to do Blade 2 with Wesley Snipes, who, oh my God, if you ask me, he just stole Coming. He just stole Coming to America. Every time Wesley was on camera or on the screen, your eyes just went to him. You know, he's just another one. So,
a fine specimen.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Now tell us about the role that you played in Blade 2.
I played the lead role. I'm the daughter of Damaskinos, who is like the ultimate baddie. And we're sort of vampires, but we're breeding a new type of vampires. So I'm the princess. And then, of course, I meet Blade. And then sort of we have a sort of a thing. And then sort of I help him, obviously, save the day. It was a very fun role. I'd never really done an action movie. And the director of that one is called Guillermo del Toro, who is the most amazing Mexican director. I mean, you probably know him from The Labyrinth of Fawn and from his many, many movies. He's just an incredible talent that has now risen to international stardom. But at the time, you know, he was making his way and entrance into Hollywood. So I got very lucky also to work with a director that really felt like somebody that I had an affinity to. And yeah, it was quite the experience. I mean, being part of a big Hollywood movie like that, it was a lot. It was heavy. It was a lot of work. Night shoots in Prague for months at a time.
Prague. Wow. Was it cold?
It was freezing and it was dark all the time. We were like literally vampires living by night, all the time, all the time.
I know those night shoots are brutal. It's like, it kind of takes you a while to readjust. Yeah, you're like, I will take my son. Now, you continued acting constantly. And then in 2013, you got married. You found your king. How did you meet?
We met in Buenos Aires. He's from Argentina. I was shooting a Pantene commercial. And he was shooting a movie and a friend of ours who's a Colombian director was like, hey, we're in town. Hey, let's meet up. We're like, yeah, sure. Okay. I was like, I got nothing better to do. And take me out to dinner by all means. But I thought he was gay. I thought his hands were flopping. He was like, whoa. He was so nice. And he gave me zero vibes. He was just nice.
So it wasn't love at first sight.
No.
Not at all.
Friendship. But it was like, connection, like friendship, like laughing and having a great time. And then the next day he's like, oh, let's go out for lunch. I was like, okay, sure. I got time before my flight. And then he put his hand on the small of my back. And I was like, the chill up my spine. My flags went up. My hair was like, I have misjudged the situation.
What's his name?
He wants me. His name is Lucas.
Lucas. Yes. So it was love that second time that you kind of went,
Day two. Were like,
but you were leaving, right?
I was leaving. I was shooting a TV show called Dallas, the reboot. I was shooting it in Denver. And I was like, okay, bye. He's like, okay, bye. And you know, back at the time it was BlackBerry Messenger. Do you remember that?
Yeah, of course I do.
BlackBerry Messenger one time, two times, 10 times, 20 times, we were just messaging all day long. Then we were like on Skype and they would be like falling asleep together on Skype 2 months later. And that's why I say it became friendship before it was intimate, which is such a lovely way to get to know somebody.
Agreed. So the flesh is weak, honey, and you can fall in love with the wrong parts of people sometimes. Trust me, I've done it.
That is so true. That is so true. I am guilty too. I totally have been there.
The flesh is weak, honey. But you, when you get older, you're like, no, I'd really kind of like to know you to make sure I like you as a person.
Yeah. Right? And that we're compatible and that we agree that our ethics mesh and that we want the same things. And so, yeah. So I think it was actually 2010, 2011 that we met. We've been together for 10 years.
Wowzer. So how long after you guys met, then did you get married?
Well, we got pregnant first with my son.
Okay.
Because I really wanted to be a mom and I was 37 and I was like, the time is now. And I was very honest with him. I was like, listen, I this is what I want in my life right now. I want to be a mom and this is important to me. And so if you don't want it, it's okay. But this is what I want. And he was like, let's do this. So
I tell you something? You're lucky you found that guy because I was at that part in my life too, where my clock was ticking and I was like, I want to be a mother. Mm-hmm. And for me, unfortunately, it didn't work out. You know what I mean? That right before we were going to get married and do the right thing, that it just fell apart. So I'm happy for you that I looked at him and I was like, our children would be so beautiful. But then I got to know him better. I was like, oh God, but then I'd have to answer to you for years. And so I'm glad it worked out for you. Yeah. I dodged that bullet.
Yeah. Yeah, yes. I understand that for us, it's so hard as actors. It is. Because we have to put our careers on hold. Our bodies mm-hmm. are not available to do what yep. we want. And it's a, you know, Vivisha, it's also a really valid choice. I have a lot of friends that do not want to be moms. And I, you know, and I understand your longing and I totally hear that. And I also feel like, you know, your career has been so important and so big and that it's so valuable for everything that you keep putting out in the world, and you have more energy. Half of my energy is taken, you know, 7 years were hijacked from my life, from, you know, from my children, especially yes. because of my son. And now my daughter still, I make myself available, and I know it's a priority, and that's energy I'm taking out of my career. But I'm very much at peace with that. That's something that I've desired and wanted.
Yeah. Well, just so you know, I have 6 godchildren, and all I got to do is spend an afternoon with them or take them on an adventure. And it's like, oh, okay, I get my mother vibes. But now yes. I want to talk about
now you give them back.
Yes,
now
I do.
Yeah. Now I'm going on the weekend.
But you had a son, Mateo, mm-hmm. and he passed mm-hmm. away.
My sunshine.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Can you share mm-hmm. that story with us?
I would love to. I'm always very proud of my son, and I don't guarantee I won't cry because it's also okay. a very emotional subject for me. But as I mentioned, I really wanted to be a mom, and I had been waiting for a long time to be a mom. And my husband and I got pregnant fairly quickly, and I had him when I was just about to turn 39. I was 38, and very quickly something wasn't right. It was very difficult for him to latch on and feed. And at 4 months, we got a diagnosis of him having a genetic condition called leukodystrophy. Leukodystrophy is really rare. It's a very rare affection of the myelin sheath. So basically, it's like the white matter is not sending signals to the body to work properly. Mm. And he was deeply impacted. He was nonverbal. He was non-mobile. But when I tell you he had a 1,000-watt smile, I'm not kidding. This is him. And he was just such a wise, deep, and loving child that really healed parts of my life that I would have never expected or thought. I was always very open with about his condition on social media, and I think I was able to connect with so many other people that had children with disabilities, whether they be genetic or autism or whatever special needs they had, cerebral palsy going on, and sort of highlight the beauty that these children bring into the world, their ability to exist, to be, and to show us different ways of being that are not focused simply on achievement, productivity, you know, winning. His soul and his presence was very difficult to resist when he left. It was just like one of those things. And losing him was very hard. It was very hard. And so I put it all in a book. It's called To Heaven and Back. I wrote it in Spanish because I feel in Spanish. And it was published by Penguin Random House. And I really loved connecting with so many other mothers and their stories through this. It's been a huge blessing. And although it's hard, I also wouldn't change an iota of it. I'm deeply proud, not only of him, but also of the person that I've become through him.
I'm glad you had as much time as you did. It's really touching. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad that you weren't afraid to share that with mm-hmm. others, because, you know, we so many times, as in Hollywood and stuff like that, we're always taught that everything's supposed to be perfect. And we have these perfect children and we take their pictures with them. And, you know, the fact mm-hmm. that you were a caregiver and you sacrificed years to love him. Mm-hmm. I commend mm-hmm. you for that. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. I know it was a choice. And I know some people say, well, my God, you could have not done it. I don't feel I could have not done it. I feel like God put it in front of me so that I could fully experience what I was going to experience. And I knew I had to be a mom. I just didn't know it was going to be that hard. But I knew it was part of my soul's journey. And I know it was his soul's journey. And the deep sort of spiritual gain that you have from the proximity of death and the loss of a loved one, I think that still carry me to this day, deeper into self-acceptance, deeper into self-love, deeper into compassion as values that I want to embody every day in my life, even as I go back to my acting world and my work.
Did it make you afraid to have children again?
I think I'm very courageous. I'm a very courageous human being, because while Mateo was still a baby, I told my husband we need to give him a brother or sister. And there was a 50% chance of, actually 25% chance of it happening again. But I knew in my heart that my daughter was coming healthy. And my husband trusted me. And so we got pregnant naturally, no controlling. And there she is, 6-year-old beauty.
What's her name?
Luna May.
Luna May. I love it. I love it. Now, did she get to know Mateo at all?
Oh,
did
yeah.
She have, yeah.
Yeah. He passed away when she was 3.5.
Oh, wow.
When you lose a child, the years that are thereafter are difficult, are very difficult for your family unit, for all of us. And so not only did she experience not having her brother anymore, but she also experienced the aftermath of his presence, not being with us physically anymore, because he's around all the time. I kid you not. Like, I see him everywhere all the time. And yeah, so she, you know, first day of school here, she's like, what do people want to share? She brings a picture of her brother. She's like, this is my brother and he's in heaven. And, and it takes people aback with the ease and just the natural way that she brings him forth into her life, because he's with us all the time, as I'm sure you feel with your dad.
Yeah. Yeah. Those angels. Yeah. They come through sometimes. Sometimes I'll look at my phone and either a picture of my dad comes up on my screensaver or something, or I'll be home visiting my family and something will come up and I'm like, oh, hey, dad, you're passing through, you know?
Yeah.
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 So I don't have much more time with you. So I just want to talk about where you're at now. Because I so appreciate talking with you, because you've touched me. I mean, you're just a really beautiful spirit. So now,
thank you, sweetheart. I feel the same way.
Yeah. Such a cry, baby. I'm so sorry.
No, don't apologize. I like I said, I think that vulnerability and courage and connecting are the three most important things that we can do as human beings. So it's okay.
I
said I was going to cry. I didn't know that you were going to cry.
Because first of all, I love children. I do. I love children. And I just love how beautifully, like you explained your journey and how grateful you were at the time that you did get to spend with him. Because, you know, you see children like not being taken care of and everything. Or,
yeah.
Yes. And it just was this a beautiful story. So
thank
I'm glad
you.
That you have a
so
book
much.
That you can, you know, let other women know that if they have a child mm-hmm. that has disabilities, that it's not a curse, that you approached it with love and compassion, and you can, mm-hmm. you know, give them some insights on that. So mm-hmm. it just touched my heart. I love good people. I do. Mm-hmm. I do. Because there's not a whole lot of them mm-hmm. around nowadays. Okay. Mm-hmm. So let me get it together before I cry my lashes off. I thought I was going to cry to you about when I heard you were daddy's girl. I thought that was going to happen, but it was Mateo. So Mateo, thank you. Came through here today. So now you're working with your husband.
Yes.
Phyllis, and on that, you guys are producing.
Let's see how that goes.
Together. Yeah.
We don't kill each other.
No. Sometimes it can be tough. No. Yeah. But sometimes it can be amazing, you know?
No, it's going to be fun. It's a comedy to start with. So we're in the right genre.
Right.
It should be a lot of fun to make. I just finished a drama, so I'm very happy to go into a comedy.
Oh, I know.
It's called Lie to Me, like you mentioned, and it's for Amazon. And it's the story of four couples. We're a couple that is having trouble. They don't have kids. They're just like reaching that point of like becoming distant. they both have an affair, and then sort of like the rekindling of their relationship and how they kind of get back to one another.
Okay, what was the name of that? What was the name of it again? Don't Lie to Me.
Lie to Me. No, Lie to Me.
Lie to Me.
Lie to Me. Oh, yeah, baby. Lie to Me. Lie to Me. The idea behind it is that we all lie a little bit. Whether it's like in our Instagram poses, how we put a push-up bra, or all the things we do. All the little things we do to appear different than who we are, or to better ourselves, or to, you know, we just, you know, had a little affair on the side, or did a little of this, and don't really, you know. So it's all the reasons and the things that, and there's another couple that is more the comedy relief, and they're also go through a lot of adventures and different kind of lies, and presents themselves in ways that they're not really themselves. So it should be fun.
I love it. I wish you guys the best of luck on that. And then wait a minute. And then we have another one that you developed. Yes. This is not a love song.
Yes.
Tell us quickly about that.
This answers a lot of my passion, like I mentioned, for feminism and sort of where the woman, as women, we stand. And it's a true story about a woman called Tina Modotti. I have her books here. She was an incredible photographer from the 20s that started with Edward Weston, who's the father of American photography, and surpassed his talent. Lived in Mexico during the Cultural Revolution. Did you see that movie Frida Kahlo, Salma Hayek's Frida Kahlo?
No, I did not. Movie? I love Salma Hayek.
Okay, well, she has Tina in her story. Ashley Judd plays her. She's just an incredible Italian artist, a woman that wouldn't marry, that was very free, that was an artistic and social activist, and got crushed by the patriarchy. Got really, punished for being such a free spirit at such an early time, ahead of her time. So I feel like it's a very timely story to tell, reflecting a little bit back on the pioneers, women that have paved the way for us to feel and be the way that we are. And I'm obsessed with her. I'm obsessed. I've been obsessed with her for 20 years. So I cannot wait to make that story.
I love it. Last question, because like I said, I'm running out of time with you, and I so appreciate your time today. Your hustle advice?
I think my hustle advice would be to really grant yourself permission to step back at times, to be able to recenter yourself and come from who you truly are, your authentic self, because nobody's going to be quite like you. And if you're trying to be somebody else, you're barking off the wrong tree. So sometimes stepping back is the best hustle, because you'll be coming from your center, your truth, your authentic self. And there is nothing more appealing than honesty and truth. And that's what you can bring to life. That's your unique voice, is what you can bring forth. And sometimes we're so afraid to step back because we're afraid of losing. You just want to go, go, go.
Oh, yes.
Sometimes to step back is, and then you can persevere, and then you can kind of get back at it.
Agreed.
Take a little step back is something very, very precious.
Kind of never lose your core, right? Because I finally, now being a woman in my 50s, am finally comfortable in the skin I'm in. And I protect, I protect my peace at all costs. And if that means losing something or losing someone, I'm okay with letting it go.
I completely agree. Yep.
Well, that leads us perfectly into today's hustle hack. And today's hustle hack, we are going to dedicate it to the memory of Mateo. Hashtag to heaven and back. Darlings, trust your gut. It's hard to take a stand when you have outside influences telling you to be this and to do this and to do that. Believe in yourself. Trust your gut. It's always going to lead you to the right place. It's okay to say no. It's okay to have seasons of shedding when there are people in your life that don't need to be there for you to have peace in your life. Protect your peace at all costs, darlings. Don't be afraid to stand up for you. I want to thank my beautiful, amazing guest, Leonore. Tell folks where they can find you on social media.
Thank you so much for having me here. It's been just truly a pleasure talking to you, and
you're welcome.
And thank you for granting me this space to share I am mostly on Instagram at @la_LeoVarela. I'm on Twitter at @LeonardVarela, and I am on Facebook at @IAM.LeoVarela.
I love that. We'll always be forever connected to you. Thank you so much for joining me today on Hustling with Vivica A. Fox. Darlings, you can follow your girl at Miss Vivica Fox on Twitter, at Miss V Fox on Instagram, and follow at Stage 29 Podcast too. Don't forget to follow, subscribe, review, download, and listen to Hustling with Vivica A. Fox, available on Apple Podcasts or wherever you want to listen. Until next time, darlings. Bye for now.
This has been a Stage 29 podcast production. The podcast is executive produced by Patty Ciano, Laferne Cusack, and Stephanie Kaysen. Our audio editors are Jackson Ruff and Jonathan DeMatti. Callie Kelts is the social media producer. And a special thanks to the rest of our podcast crew, Rwani Horenige, William Cusack, Lisa Clark, Katie Brown, and Morgan Kaler.
The Hustling with Vivica A. Fox podcast is for informational and entertainment purposes only and is not intended as a replacement or substitution for any professional medical, financial, legal, or other advice, diagnosis, or treatment. This podcast does not constitute the practice of medicine or any other professional service. The use of any information provided during the podcast is at the listener's own risk. For medical or other advice appropriate to your specific situation, please consult a physician or other trained professional.